This is the October 12 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Chip Nellinger. He's at Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. John Zanker joins us from Risk Management Commodities. That's in Lafayette, Indiana. And Mike Zuzlow is here from GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world online at WILLAG.org. Beyond the USDA report, I'd like to get a list of items from each of you we should take up. Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, I'll start with you. What's on your list today?
Yeah, Todd, I think we ought to talk about the carry in the market and basis. And I think we ought to talk a little bit about these outside markets and the extra geopolitical risks we face now, especially in our crude oil and energy markets.
John Zanker of Risk Management Commodities, anything to add?
Well, I think we need to look at these exports, which are not too robust at this point and could really be a downer here if we don't see some improvement. And South American weather. Looks like we got a little heat dryness early on that we can talk about. And then, yes, what could happen to crude oil prices if Iran is drawn deeper into this situation, and what would its impact be on corn, soybeans, and wheat?
And Mike Zuzlow, GlobalCommResearch.com. Anything on the macro side that you've been thinking about?
No, I think the others covered it perfectly, Todd.
Thank you much. I thought that might be the case. Well, let's get right into this, and I'll start with you, Mike Zuzlow. On Thursday morning, USDA released the October crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Quickly running through the numbers for the crop production figures, they dropped corn yield by 0.8 of a bushel to 173 bushels to the acre. That dropped total production about 70 million bushels. Soybean yield was down 0.5 bushel to 49.6, and that dropped total production there by about 42 million bushels. Does that make much of a difference to the marketplace? Clearly it did on Thursday, but I'm thinking longer term.
Yeah, I think it could. And I think this goes back to, you know, what the other fellows were talking about with the outside markets. If the crude oil market would start to spike, I think this report put us in a position where we had lost about $1 a bushel since the September report on soybeans, Todd, and about a dime since the September report on the corn for lead month futures. And I kind of feel like that dollar in the soybeans, especially given the dramatic reduction in world-ending stocks, and as John was talking about the South American weather. And I'll add a third thing. I'm starting to hear, the guys are also probably starting to hear this as well, that there's a pretty substantial problem in transportation in Brazil, not unlike what we're dealing with on the lower Mississippi, and the northern Brazil is really starting to get too dry. And I've seen the prices in Paranagua go from about a $50 a ton discount to about a $20 a ton discount versus our Gulf of Mexico soybeans. So I think this report did kind of line us up for a better possibility, if not probability, for a better recovery in the soybeans. Obviously, wheat and corn have to join in at some point.
And Chip Nellinger, your quick response to the USDA report once it was released on Thursday morning?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with Mike, I guess. You know, I think the market was kind of too heavily short going into this and expecting a bearish number, even though the average estimate was for small cuts. You know, all they do is they take the middle of the range. And so I think the majority of people were fearful and expecting higher yields on corn and especially beans. We didn't get that. The funds have big short positions built up in corn and wheat. The funds were out of all their longs and probably net short in beans. And now we just got a report that, you know, wasn't bearish by any stretch of the imagination, actually maybe a touch friendly on the world bean carryout number. And so, you know, I think just seasonally and the fact that we're, you know, probably by next Monday on the harvest progress report going to be north of 50% on both corn and beans, it's the time of year on the calendar to kind of have marked a harvest low and kind of put a rally on into winter. And I think this report doesn't throw any cold water on that idea at all.
Do you agree, John?
Yes. This morning, and after 42 years, Todd, I should know better, but I made the statement that I didn't think we'd see anything today that would have a major impact on futures. And here we had beans up over 40 cents, 45 cents at one point today. But, you know, interestingly, and we, you know, I follow the major states pretty closely as far as yields, and was hearing generally better than expected soybean yields in most of the major states, certainly, you know, here in Illinois and Indiana, I think. But and it's interesting that those yields did not change much in those major states, just really minor changes. But the outlying states changed enough to get that yield down a half a bushel. And even though the domestic carryout didn't fall, still at 220, you know, I think Chip mentioned that the world carryout fell by about 3.5 million tons, and I think that probably caught some interest in as well as this growing weather situation that we're seeing down in South America.
Now, Mike, you mentioned the weather issues related to moving corn, particularly logistically, soybeans too, I suppose, in the northern part of Brazil. I want to come back to that with you in just a bit, but I would like to focus some at this point on other global stocks. For instance, what did you see in the wheat numbers that came from USDA today?
Yeah, the wheat number was probably the what I would call the leaky bucket in terms of U.S. Stocks went up on a higher production figure, and we didn't really change hardly anything in the world numbers, Todd. And so I think the wheat will continue to be the most pressing issue as far as allowing this market to rally, allowing the row crops to rally, especially with still more than 50% of the harvest to go. If I had to look to something that would shortchange us in terms of rally potential and that recovery in the beans especially, it would be the wheat because it's the most sensitive to the macro, and it didn't get anything really to support it. In fact, the wheat average price went down 20 cents a bushel today, while corn went up a nickel and beans stayed the same. I thought that spoke volumes, given that the USDA raised yield here after harvest is already over, and they cut the price after harvest is already over. So wheat always makes me wonder, in a big report like this, did demand go up or did supply go down? And what we saw, generally speaking, was supply went down. So that still means we're in a weather supply-led rally, which to me says we still need to hedge, with the caveat that crude oil is going to be an interesting dynamic, as will the Fed policy here in the next 2 months.
I want to stay with you for just a moment, Mike, because I would like you to take up the logistical issue that's created by low water levels on the Mississippi River here and on the Amazon River in Brazil. How bad do you think things are there? I've seen this in some of the reports as well, but it's difficult to really get a good handle on it, I think.
My understanding is they're having to move from the north to the south and get around this issue. So it's a significant issue. It's adding cost. I would probably put it on the same kind of level of what the new Ukrainian grain corridor is probably adding in terms of cost, especially getting to the Danube ports. But, you know, at the same time, we've got the Memphis, Mississippi River at negative 11.2 feet at the end of this week when low water level is negative 5. So we're both in pretty tough shape. I think that's why I like the corn a little bit more on the demand side than the beans, because we've been seeing more Mexican demand, and that seems to be more of a rail demand mindset.
John Zenker, on that export note, I want to come back to you because you mentioned them. Suggesting that we really need to have those. Mexico has been back in the market for corn. However, USDA managed to drop exports by 25 million in corn this time around. Is there more to come in that direction, do you suppose?
Well, there could be. I'm not friendly exports for either corn or soybeans, and it's the Brazilians, of course. Boy, they're just continue to get in our pockets deeper and deeper each year. And then you add in the river situation, and Chip mentioned talking about the spread, so I'll leave that for him. But the spread action is certainly not suggesting that we have anything good going on there. And we're going to rely heavily on the Pacific Northwest for our soybean exports. And that's not the best situation, of course. So right now, we're about 330 million behind last year's pace as far as soybean sales. USDA has us down 237 on the year. So these next 6 weeks, we typically see our biggest shipping period for soybeans. And we could fall behind a substantial amount here in the next 6 weeks if we don't start seeing some boats show up at the Gulf. And the number could be pretty large. So I was bearish soybeans coming into today's report and backed out and yesterday just with the idea that the reports haven't always been that kind over the years. So I like to be neutral going into these reports, but I'm going to step aside here. There could be some more upside potential, but watch these exports and we can start watching them real closely on Monday, because again, we need a big surge in, from what we've been seeing.
So Chip, turn to you now on the spreads. Farmers do need to manage risk. What are you suggesting to them and what do you see in the marketplace?
Yeah, so Todd, what I meant by that was that there's a really strong carry in the market. Some of that because of, you know, bigger ending stocks than maybe what we're used to the last couple of years. And some of that because of higher interest rates and the calculation of what, you know, carry is. And so, you know, I think to me, you're maybe more back to quote unquote normal, a normal post-harvest bounce now where producers on even stored bushels on farm and even it comes into the conversation on stored bushels at the elevator. In a lot of cases, there's enough carry, especially in the corn market. If we have a little bit of a bounce, maybe push this March contract in corn back up towards, you know, 5.25, 5.30. That is what needs to be watched in here is the ability to come out and block out when you want the movement, when the logistics make sense for you, and then sell the carry in the market on bounces, wait for the basis to get better as it typically does into winter and spring. And I think that should be the focus on, you know, a risk management plan going forward. And that's a little bit of a different twist than kind of what we've been used to the last 3 or 4 years with not a lot of carry in the market or even market inversions. That's a little bit of a different, kind of more of an old-fashioned type of a market we're going into here, in my opinion.
Is that your belief as well, Mike? Are we back to what would be considered a more normal marketing program at this time?
I would say in the short term, yes, but I think in 2024, the two demand bears that have sat on top of us has been the Fed policy and the Chinese economic policy. Those are the two big demand drivers that I think those are running out of gas at this point, as far as I think the Fed with higher energy prices and, as Chip said, the interest rates and the debt load that we're starting to carry in this world and starting to realize how big it is. I do think the Fed is getting very close to hitting the pause button on interest rate hikes. And if we would happen to see the crude oil go up, I think that would kind of just signal to them, we really don't want to mess with this market right now because of what we've already got on the table. So I think that from now till January, February, pretty rough sledding as far as the carry and the spreads. But after that, I think it is still important that the world wheat stocks to use ratios are at a 9-year low. We have less, other than what John talked about with Brazil's corn competition, we have less corn competitors out there. And we do have an El Nino that's trimming some of these crops in some key areas that I think I'm buying more into, that it's going to be difficult to have excess crop supplies. And that is one thing that today's trade did realize, I think, again, after the USDA numbers came out.
I have another question. I'd like each of you to take a stab at this. John, I'll start with you. These have to relate to the season's average cash price for corn and soybeans. $4.95 for corn, that's up 5 cents. $12.90 for soybeans. That did not change this time around. This is an actual season's average cash price, not a futures price, but they're roughly equal to what December, November futures are trading at currently. And I'm wondering if you think those prices are too high and or if there was more grain sold early on than expected. And I suppose we won't really know that until we start to see some of the September and October figures from USDA as it's related to how much grain was shipped and sold into the marketplace. But again, the question really is, are $12.90 and $4.95 for season's average cash prices good marks?
Well, in the olden days, and those could have been, certainly starting even 10 to 15 years ago, we could sit here in the middle of October and make some, pretty reasonable projections for price and given demand and such. But now we have Brazil growing more soybeans, Brazil exporting more soybeans, now Brazil exporting more corn. What happens down there with the weather is just incredibly important and will certainly be every bit as important this year. So I would say that, we're going to have to see some weather problems down there, probably to get a season average cash price of $4.95 and $12.90. The USDA backed this up with their projections, Brazil production 163 on soybeans this coming year, Argentina 48. So that's a 30 million ton increase. And 30 million tons is 1.1 billion bushels. If we see a 1.1 billion bushel increase in soybean production on March 1st, we're not going to have a 12 in front of March beans. We're probably going to have 11 something. And so we have to be extremely careful in here. And, historically, outside of the last 3 years in South America, we haven't had too many crop scares down there. I mean, just very limited. So that area of the world saved our prices here the last 3 years. And it's not a given that that's going to happen. Now we're kind of starting off with some fears, but that could give us an opportunity here to, look out forward, get some decent prices established here. When corn was at six, we had a lot of people thinking 180 bushel corn with how dry it was. And so there wasn't a lot of corn sold at $6, and now some of those fields are doing 220, and 220 at $5 is a greater return gross than 180. So we have to keep those things in mind here as we go forward, and certainly any kind of rebound in price is going to have to be looked at as a price, as an opportunity to get some additional sales on.
And I'll follow up both. I'll start with you, Chip, and then to Mike. $4.95 and $12.90. Those are the benchmarks. For me personally, that's where I try to be above. That would be very difficult at this harvest time. But given the full marketing year, can it be managed, do you suppose?
Yeah, I think it probably can. Especially I think this goes back to the carry discussion, right? Because you're going to get paid this year to carry your crop. I mean, based on what the current structure looks like and the spreads in both corn and beans. So that's some of it. And the market maybe just today, after we got the release of this report, is maybe starting to focus on South America. I really agree with the comments earlier. They are not off to a great start for their growing season. In Brazil or Argentina, either one. I mean, really, you're into the third year of a drought in Argentina. They really didn't do anything to over their winter, our spring and summer, to fix their drought problem in Argentina. So it is less than ideal there. At the end of the day, we still have relatively tight stocks to use ratios on corn and beans in here, even though maybe the sheer carryout is bigger than what we're used to the last couple of years. Stocks to use ratio is still pretty tight. So it wouldn't take much to get flare ups and some risk premium put back in this market. We talked about the crude oil situation and, the uneasiness with the current world geopolitical situation. So I do think that's a possibility, probably more realistic on the corn maybe than the beans, but we've got a long way to go on weather in South America before it's said and done too.
And finally, Mike Suslow, $4.95 and $12.90.
Yeah, I'd be more in line, Todd, at this point with $5 and $12. I think, to John's point, we've been living off of very tight supplies out of South America and a robust Chinese demand. Those two things both concern me at this point. And I think statistically is part of the reason why we're at 1290, because 2021, we had 274 carryover and a 1330 average. The next year, last year, we had 268 carryover and a 1420 price. If you go back before, you know, the last couple, 3 years, those kind of carryover levels domestically, $10, $10.40 probably would have been a lid as far as an average cash price. And so before the report and after the report, I'm going to keep saying the same thing that I've said to clients and subscribers is 65 bushels times 1250 is over $800 an acre. Now that after the report, if we get another rally on Monday and basis doesn't fall apart, 65 bushels times 13, that's only almost $850 of revenue. Those are really amazing revenue levels, and we just can't lose sight of that revenue per acre when it comes to the soybeans, given what we are seeing the potential in South America having.
Let's deal with some of the outside markets at this point. When the Israel-Hamas war began, and Iran may or may not be involved in this process, I was thinking on that Friday that there was a possibility that corn and soybeans and wheat on Sunday evening could rally, especially after Israel managed to declare war on Hamas on Sunday afternoon. That did not happen. John Zanker, you wanted to talk about some of these issues related to crude oil. And is it simply that crude oil can drag prices higher with it in your mind, or is there something else at play?
Well, there's several dynamics going on here, and you know, we've seen crude oil prices rally in large part to production cuts, limits from Saudi Arabia and Russia, and then the Saudis have been talking about maybe easing up on those restrictions, and there's some political stuff going on there, and ironically, talking about maybe recognizing Israel. So prices had worked their way down. And then with the start of this war over the weekend, boom, back up $3. And then we've drifted back lower. And if it doesn't get Iran deeply involved, there's really not much going on here that impacts crude oil prices. But I believe the Israelis bombed in Damascus airport today. In part to stop a plane from landing that was carrying some Iranian military officials and some weapons as well. So if Iran gets pulled in, then everything changes, and we may be at $100 crude in a hurry, and that's certainly going to have an upward pull on corn prices, I think. But, you know, demand worldwide in a time with two wars going on, I don't know. Again, it's just the dynamics are crazy, something we haven't seen and something we haven't had to deal with.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it comes down to Iran. If they get pulled into this conflict, just the sheer amount of production capabilities in that area, as well as the transportation of crude oil and energy products, I think that could explode crude oil prices higher. I think it's push and pull, right, between the world economy slowing down because of these higher interest rates, and, you know, the potential for some more serious conflict or dragging other countries like Iran into it. If you see that, I don't know why you wouldn't go flying way past $100 a barrel. And obviously that spills over, right? You're talking about better profitability on the ethanol side, potentially on the biodiesel side, the renewable diesel side. They already have some pretty good margins right now. You know, I think we're push and pull between the economy and the Israeli conflict, and it's a powder keg for the crude oil market potentially.
And Mike Zuzulo, I know you pay close attention to these macroeconomics.
Yeah, I mean, other than what the guys have said, I totally agree with. I mean, this is where that, as John was saying, that Arab nationalism, and Chip was relating what was going on with Iran. This is where this jihad and this Arab nationalism is really kind of the powder keg to historically seeing something similar to the early 1970s or early 1980s. I think the big thing that I keep going back to is what the crude oil does in relation to the bond yields and the U.S. dollar. And I say that, Todd, because the strong negative relationship between bond yields and the grain commodities, grain indexes especially, have been, I think to me, I've never seen them as strong in terms of correlation relationships. And I think that goes back to how we trade nowadays. And, you know, we don't have very good statistics as far as up-to-date statistics, but back in 2017, the CFTC looked at specifically algo trading, and currencies had gone to 83% complete algo trading. Energies were at 57%, and that was a jump of 10% in just 2 years prior to when they looked at it. So now 7 years on, I'm guessing that energy and agriculture are in the 70%+ range as far as how we trade. And so these correlations mean so much, and it goes back to this funds versus fundamentals type mindset. We four can see the upside potential in crude oil if this thing gets big. But the funds and the algo traders aren't really there yet. They're still sitting in their computer model world. And that's going to make it tougher for us, I think, in the longer term.
How does the United States, being the number one top crude oil producer on the planet, that changed in 2018 and I believe remains the same today still, change the dynamics of what impact the price, the dynamics within the crude oil market itself, and what impact that has on other commodities? Has anybody thought very much about this and what it really means since that time?
I will add very briefly that look at just the rig oil count period, and it's still below 50, it's still below 500 rigs out there that are operating, and that's still below where we were at the beginning of 2022. So we have no incentive right now to build up our oil supplies. That's my take.
Yeah, so that there's no incentive at this point to continue to build supplies. At $100, maybe things would be different. Chip, you had something to add.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it's a combination. I think it puts, maybe the potential for some extra profitability maybe on the biodiesel and ethanol side, because it's a refining issue. Our production's down. There's not been any, support or investment in refining or even production. A lot of money pulled out. Our strategic reserve is at maybe an all-time low, or certainly a 20, 30-year low. And so if there is a shock somewhere in the world and crude oil and energy prices rally, unfortunately, domestically, it probably puts a real hurt on the consumer here, maybe more so than when we had a more plentiful supply. And then it could also maybe enhance these renewable fuels margins a little bit additionally as well. And again, I'm not an expert on this. This is just kind of my 50,000-foot view on the possibility of that. And at the end of the day, let's hope that we don't see that, because if you see $100 plus crude oil, it means that things are going terribly wrong in the Middle East.
Yeah, I will see if we can track down some crude oil specialist at some point in that marketplace and talk to them to see what their thoughts are on this. Final thoughts, speaking of that, from each of you. I will start with you, John Zanker, from Risk Management Commodities.
Well, I think in addition to all that's been covered, let's keep an eye now on these new crop prices, the 2024 crop. We have Dease corn about 523. That's at a premium to the nearby, which is something that we haven't seen in the last 3 years. And soybeans are not, 24 is at a discount to the nearby, but at a profitable level. And production costs, certainly fertilizer costs, are going to come down sharply this year. So we'll be keeping an eye on that new crop. I think minimum price contract type of situations here as we get the old crop beans back above $13 cash. We need to take a look at that. Mike mentioned the possibility that the average cash price could be closer to $12 before it's all over. And I would agree 100%. So a lot of it's just going to come down to South America. We can all make predictions at this point, but great weather, we're going to struggle to see $12 soybeans on the 1st of March. Bad weather, and we could be back to that $15 area. So manage the floors, give yourself some upside potential, and I think we could be in line for a very good year.
Mike Zislow from GlobalComResearch.com.
Yeah, it's hard to add to that. I would only reiterate what we talked about a few minutes ago about the wheat side of the equation. What has not changed in all the things we've discussed is the wheat has not been the leader to the upside. It's, in fact, gotten within 7 cents of its major low in soft red wheat before today's report. So we need new monthly highs in corn and wheat to change the sentiment at this point. Otherwise, I think the wheat's going to continue to get caught up in the dollar, the bond yields, and selling pressure because of some Ukrainian sale or Russian sale or whatever it may be. But it's really the funds that are driving these fundamental and these trading practices right now, if you ask me, Todd. And the USDA report didn't do anything to help that. So the wheat market can add to the upside, and I think it almost has to at this point.
And finally, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Yeah, I just say keep your eye on the ball here. We've got plenty of carry in the market. Be ready to use these post-harvest bounces, which historically, you know, can carry all the way into January, February of the next year. This report today was, you know, really what we needed. It couldn't almost have been any better. It, I think we were oversighted all on the worry and the bear train going into this, and maybe push these markets a little bit lower than what they should have been. And so just keep your eye on the ball and be ready to sell bounces up, you know, basically in the 525 to 530 range on December corn, plus any additional carry if you're carrying that crop out into winter or spring. And, you know, I think strong pushes north of $13 on the beans are, you know, opportunities to get scaled into some additional sales there. And don't disagree with keeping an eye on the 24 crop as well. It's not too early to be thinking about that.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media's Public Radio for the farming world. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org or search it out in your favorite podcast application. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, John Zanker from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.